Whatever's happening in your life is there to help you grow, to get to the other place, to help you again self-actualize. So, you know, karma, a lot of people talk about karma and they have something bad goes wrong, they blame it on karma. Oh, that person had bad karma, whatever. I look at karma as this way, it's a speed bump. So when something happens, it's a little speed bump telling you, hey, you're going in the wrong direction, slow down, you need to go in this direction. It's to help you move into that correct direction that you are meant to go. And so when the big health challenge comes, when the relationship breakup comes, when there's a financial hardship, all of these things, if you can look at it, hey, it's here to wake me up. I've been sleeping through this and it's here to wake me up.
He's a best-selling author, award-winning filmmaker, inspirational speaker, certified nutrition coach, plant-powered athlete, and host of the number one holistic health podcast in the world, Nathan Crane.
Hey, 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 welcome to the podcast. I'm Nathan Crane, your host. I'm excited that you're joining me for today's conversation. Before we get started, I want to let you know about a very special offer I've got for you, my listener. If you're looking for a great tasting, nutrient dense, high quality protein powder to fuel your body, head over to plantpoweredathlete.com and get your plant powered protein. I've got a 10% discount code for you. Just use Nathan Podcast. Plant powered protein is 100% organic and kosher certified with a powerful combination of high quality plant proteins like quinoa, brown rice, pea, flax, and hemp. It's also infused with three scientifically verified adaptogens, ashwagandha, maca, and ginseng for more energy and recovery. And you can get 10% off right now. Just use the code NathanPodcast and head over to plantpoweredathlete.com to get your plant-powered protein today. All right, that's it. Let's dive into the show. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. Today I am joined by my good friend Stacy McCarthy. Stacy, thanks for jumping on.
Oh, good to be here. You know, I love just spending any time with you, Nathan.
Yeah, thank you. So Stacy is a world-renowned yoga teacher, health and wellness expert, is a really accredited speaker, international renowned speaker. She speaks and inspires audiences all over the world. Actually, she spoke at our Holistic Leadership Council retreat, which she is a Holistic Leadership Council member recently. And your talk was actually super inspiring. Like it was, I think it was called Safari to the Soul, right? And it was really, you know, the concepts you shared, the practices you gave, and just the, you know, the wealth of knowledge and experience and wisdom that you bring to the health and wellness space from a mental, emotional, physical, spiritual dimension is profound. And that's why I wanted to bring you on the podcast. One, just because I love talking with you. I think we've become good friends these last couple of years, and I appreciate the work you do. And two, I think you just have a wealth of wisdom to share with people, especially from an ancient Eastern, you know, yogic traditional background and training, which I think is incredibly valuable for people to know more about. So excited to get into that with you today.
Yeah, me too.
What
ask me anything.
Yeah, what I mean, what really got you into two things? One, love to hear a little bit more about your backstory getting into yoga, but then two, like share with people some of the things about yoga that most people don't realize, some of the ancient teachings of yoga, some of the philosophy side, some of what we think of yoga today is kind of this physical exercise practice here in the West. That's kind of the experience most people get. It's like 80, 90%, you know, exercise, 10, 15, 20% sometimes kind of spiritual, mental, emotional, which traditional yoga actually was the opposite, right?
Yes. Yeah, completely. So at a young age, I was a plant-powered athlete.
Nice. good choice of words. I love it.
So I was a swimmer. I began swimming at the age of five and swam through high school, had state records and nationals and All-American, all that stuff, full ride swimming scholarship to college. And while I was at college, one day I came out for practice. I went to school in Colorado, grew up in Florida. And I came out of the locker room, indoor pool. I had my Speedo on, my cap, my goggles, ready to get in the pool. And the coach says, pool pump's broke. We can't get in the pool today. So we're going to do aerobics. And this was, I'm going to age myself a little bit. This was in the 1980s, the early 1980s. And so the assistant coach at the time walked in with this giant boombox, a cassette tape, put in this music, and literally she starts calling out this stuff like jumping jacks. And then she started getting fancy, knees up. And then she started getting really fancy, grapevine, and then at a spin, I had no freaking idea what we're doing. I'm barefoot in my Speedo, like, what in the heck is going on here? And at the end of it, I absolutely loved it. I just loved the whole thing, the not being wet, not having green hair, just the whole thing. So I changed my major to exercise physiology. I was a forestry major, believe it or not. I thought I was going to sit up in nature at the parks and look out at the birds and the trees. And I switched to exercise physiology. And when I graduated, oh, and the swim team used to come to California to a place called La Jolla, beautiful, one of the most beautiful places in the world, mm-hmm. to train. And so we would, we stayed at right in La Jolla. In the morning, we swim up at University of San Diego. And then the afternoons, we would swim La Jolla Cove, ocean swim from one side to the other, freezing water. I'm a Florida girl. I was freezing the whole time. But when I showed up in La Jolla, I'm like, this place is spectacular. I'm going to move here regardless of what I do. So when I graduated, I heard about a friend had a friend opening a health club, hiring aerobics teachers. And I thought, I'm going, packed up my stuff, moved to La Jolla and applied for this job. And when I applied, I had all the credentials. I looked like an athlete. I had, you know, my newly minted exercise physiology degree, and I looked like I could fit the part. So they gave me these classes. But the reality is I had never done another class since that one day on the pool deck. And I sucked. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't even know like anything about aerobics, and I had never done a dance class. I didn't know what was going on. I took my favorite music, which at the time was ska music, which is kind of like reggae type of music, mm-hmm. made up my own cassette tape, didn't know how to keep a beat. And about 2 weeks into it, the manager called me into his office and said, look, we really like you, but we're going to have to let you go. And I was totally crushed, realized that I sucked. And I was smart enough to ask him, you know, what do I need to do? And he said, you need to get a mentor and you need to figure out if you really enjoy this, what you need to do. So I did that. Long story short, I got better at teaching. And I ended up helping to open a health club in the San Diego area, worked my way up from literally a group exercise instructor up to running the program into a general manager, into eventually chief operating officer of several health clubs. So my background began very much in fitness. And at the time, our health clubs were called athletic clubs. They were called Frogs Athletic Clubs. They were started by a Navy SEAL. And our logo was a big, strong frog, bulked up frog. And we were really kind of cutting edge at the time. This was in 1991 through the 90s. So I was really very immersed in the fitness world. One day I was walking down the street and I saw some people coming out of a yoga studio. And back then there wasn't a lot of yoga studios. And this was a very traditional one. It was actually started by the very first American certified in Ashtanga Vinyasa Yoga, which is a Vinyasa Yoga now is very popular. It's kind of the yoga that we see out there a lot, moving with breath, very active. But this was a very traditional one. And the people walking out were physically very fit, but there was something else. There was an essence, an energy to them that I couldn't put my finger on it at the time, but it was something that I wanted. So I stayed and I watched the next class. I mean, I just was, and they were moving like nothing I'd ever seen, like floating through the air, but basically like levitating. These were advanced students who had really dedicated their life to the practice. Again, before all the hype, all the media of yoga, yoga, yoga.
You know, with the cold and flu season here, it's critically important that we enhance and strengthen our immune systems. Yes, would you agree? The problem is, though, that there's so much confusion out there when it comes to what actually works for our bodies and for our health. Well, I'll tell you what I used. I use Maison Beljanski's wellness products. Maison Beljanski's products are backed by science to not only help empower the immune system, but can support detoxification and contribute to our overall health. Coming from Europe, the all-natural Beljanski formulas are now available in the United States and are recommended by top doctors everywhere. A lot of the colleagues I work with, functional medicine practitioners that work with patients with all kinds of diseases, are recommending Maison Beljanski's products to their very own patients. As a special sponsor of this podcast, Maison Beljanski has included a very special discount offer for all of my listeners. You can get 15% off your first order using the promo code Nathan, and you'll always enjoy free shipping when you order four products or more. You can grab your wellness products today at MaisonBeljanski.com. That's MaisonBeljanski, MaisonBeljanski.com, and use code Nathan for 15% off. Have you heard of PEMF therapy for cancer? Well, this podcast is brought to you by Dr. Pollock, and he wants to share with you the groundbreaking research of pulsed electromagnetic field therapy in the treatment of cancer. Studies show PEMF therapy can help control the cancer process and give safe, non-toxic, and non-invasive symptom management. PEMF therapy may enhance other cancer support and treatments, lower inflammation, and promote tissue healing. Studies show it's possible to improve your general well-being and recuperate from surgery, radiation, and chemo better and more quickly. Embrace a comprehensive approach to cancer treatment with PEMF therapy, a vital tool on your path to prevention, treatment, and recovery. For caring and professional guidance and recommendations from Dr. Pollock, go to drpollock.com/intro to cancer. That's drpawluk.com/intro to cancer.
And so afterwards, I talked to the owner, and I ended up bringing some of the teachers over to the clubs I was running, and I fell in love with it. I could hardly get anyone in the classes, quite honestly, because no one really knew what yoga was in the early 90s. This is like literally 1992 or so. And the teachers were traditional. They'd started off with a Sanskrit chant, you know, and very traditional, Vande Gurnam, Chadanadavande. And people are like, what's going on here? What is this? This is crazy. And no one would come to class. And then I had one of the teachers do a demonstration, and he was well into his 40s, and he was doing an advanced practice. And these were very big clubs. A lot of people came to it, and they're watching him in amazement. Like he is just like floating through the air, doing these very advanced postures. And so people were drawn in by the physicality of the practice, like really wanting to have that kind of balanced body. And so while the intent to bring people in via exercise, and this is how I started, this is how many people start, really the intent is to help people want to discover something deeper, that along the way of their body healing from old injuries, along the way of the body becoming more balanced, healing from injuries, that they're noticing maybe something's happening in their mind, and they're becoming maybe a more peaceful person. So this is, you know, there's a good side to it, and there's always, you know, there's never black or white. There's a good side and maybe a con side. While the intent to make yoga more accessible to more people via exercise, it really marginalizes it to the point where it barely taps yoga's true intent. And so now, you know, we fast forward into, you know, the early 2020s, and yoga is barely recognizable in most places where they go. It has really been marginalized to the point where we barely even know it's yoga anymore. It's a glorified Eastern calisthenics class. And so for my teaching, a lot of my teaching is to welcome everybody to the practice, but also to plant the seeds of intention to want to go deeper. And that's to help, everybody wants to feel whole. I think if you ask most people, what they really are looking for is to feel like a whole person, to feel balanced in the body, to have an awakened calmness of the mind, not all the anxiety and all the fluctuating thoughts and emotions that we have, and to feel a deeper connection to their inner self, their inner well-being. And I think most of us are really looking to cultivate that whole person. And that's what yoga can really do.
Yeah, I mean, you are a true master yoga trainer and teacher. I mean, you were part of helping create the first college accredited yoga teacher training programs, right? I mean, you've been at the helm of this for many, many, many years. And so you've kind of seen it all and you've experienced and you know, have probably spent many, many, many thousands and thousands of hours teaching people as well as teaching other teachers. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. I've trained thousands and thousands of teachers. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're coming from it from that perspective of having significant amount of experience. And so two things. One is, like you said, yoga's true intent. If you had to boil it down into one sentence or even one word, you know, what is yoga's original or yoga's true intent?
Well, the original intent is, and I use this kind of to help people feel a little more welcome, but, and I've said this before, that a lot of people think yoga is about touching their toes because that's the way they come to practice, but yoga is about touching your soul. It's learning to be still, find that stillness within through all the chaos of our lives. And when we connect to, again, that deepest part of our inner self, this is where we find lasting peace. So, I mean, there's, again, if we go through ancient texts, I can go many layers deep of through the eight limbs of yoga, which tell us different ways. You know, we start with the first two limbs. How are we good people out in the world? You know, are we kind? Are we, you know, not stealing? Are we not hoarding and greedy? There's five of those. There's five niyamas that are, how are we treating ourselves? Are we clean of body of mind? Are we content? Are we doing our best in the world to make the world a better place? So there's five of those. And then there's the physical body of the practice. Then there's the breath of the you know, are we breathing to extend our life and bring clarity and vitality to the mind? And then the next limb is something we call pratyahara. How are we withdrawing our senses from the bombardment of external stimuli, all the media, the pings, the rings, the notifications that are telling us how to be, what to do, all of that noise outside of ourselves? Can we let that go and come into a deeper sense, which is the next limb, the sixth limb, which is something called dhyana, a deep focus and concentration. Our minds are very distracted. In fact, research shows that our minds wander about every 8 to 11 seconds, constantly wandering the mind. And so can we come into a deeper sense of focus and concentration where we are training the mind? And the practice of yoga helps us do that. Focus and concentrate our mind to the point that the focus and concentration becomes unbroken. And at the point the focus and concentration becomes unbroken, then it turns into the state of meditation. And meditation is called dhyana on the eight-limbed path. And when the meditation then becomes unbroken, and typically the meditation is on God, it's on universal source. You know, you can personify the focus however you want. You know, you can call it higher consciousness, you can call it universal source, you can call it God, you can call it whatever you want to personify it, but your focus is on that, the meditation is on that, and when it becomes unbroken, it folds into the eighth limb, which is something called samadhi. And samadhi is the eighth limb, and this is, it's something, it's the indescribable. It's like swimming in a sea of grace, you know, where you feel connected to all things everywhere. And this is that sense of oneness, of unity. And that is truly the path of the yogi. And most yogis are really focused on those three last limbs, 6, 7, and 8, the focus and concentration, the meditation, and then this oneness, the samadhi. And so the other ones before that, though, give us a beautiful blueprint on how to get there. Mm. And Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, which is an ancient text, much of what I teach is yoga philosophy as well as the physical body. But the very first Yoga Sutra is very simple, Atta Yoga Nusasanam. Now we begin the exploration of yoga. It's that simple. And then the second one, which is very profound, Yoga Sutra 1.2, Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha. Yoga ceases the fluctuations of the mind. So what is yoga? It's the liberation of your mind. And we get so stuck on the body. And look, the body's a beautiful thing. And it's such a beautiful vehicle to train us. Because we go into these yoga poses, which are called asanas. They're there to bring to the surface all our discomfort. Like all of our, like, oh, the first time you come to class, you're like, oh, the back of my legs so sore, the hamstrings. Oh, my hips are totally locked up. Oh my God, you know, I've got so much stress in my neck and shoulders. And so these poses bring it all to the surface and you start noticing. And then as you practice more and more, you start noticing, oh my gosh, I notice that when I eat really crappy, I'm eating all this processed food, I'm eating a bunch of sugar, I'm eating really crappy. When I get on my mat, oh my God, I feel stiff and gross. And now you're changing your diet. And then all of a sudden, yoga starts to penetrate all the areas of your life through this practice of moving your body. Because quite honestly, you know, the body is such a beautiful vehicle to teach us all of these other lessons of working with the mind.
So would you say, I think the simplest answer I just heard you say, which was beautiful, was yoga is liberation of your mind. I mean, the meaning of yoga is union, right? Yoga means union.
Yes.
Now union between what? Union between mind, body, spirit.
You can say that. You can say mind, body, spirit. You can even peel away what does mind, body, spirit mean in a little deeper level. But actually, it's union with, again, with the divine, with source, with oneness. So one of the beautiful things that yoga does is it doesn't, it's not religion. It's not telling you that you have to follow some religion. If yoga were a religion, it'd be a religion of one. It's you and the exploration of yourself. So this is the exploration of you connecting to yourself. So what it does do is yoga really encompasses what maybe a lot of religions have without the dogma. So what I mean by that, and this might be going a little deep for a lot of people, but if we look at all the different religions out in the world, they usually have four similar components. One is a sense of oneness, that we are in a benevolent universe, that that we are connected in some way. Most religions have that. And this is more spirituality. So yoga is not a religion, but it is a spiritual practice. So there's this sense of oneness, this connection, this feeling that we are in a beautiful, benevolent universe, that we are, and again, the personification of what you call it is you personally. I'm not here to say how anyone should connect to anything. You call it nature, call it whatever you want. But it is that if I use the word God, it's like if we are a child of God, we're a child of this benevolent universe. It's here to take care of us, to support us, to help us grow, to help us become better. And so there's this sense of oneness. So that's one thing. The next thing is that in the spiritual practice, self-actualization is an important part of that. In most religions, self-actualization, becoming a better person, is part of it. So self-actualization is really that you are here, you were born to figure out what your unique talents are and use those unique talents to the highest degree that you can to make the world a better place. And probably most people on this podcast have heard that saying that the two most important days of your life are the day you were born and the day you figure out why. Well, this is self-actualization. Using whatever your unique talents are for however you're on this earth, at your highest vision, and to make the world a better place. That's self-actualization. So you have oneness, you have self-actualization. You also, most religions and in spirituality, have a sense of service. Are you contributing during your time here on earth? Are you, in yoga, we call it seva or selfless service. Are you doing something to contribute to the world and to others to make it better? And this is service in the world. So that would be three. And then the fourth one would really be inner peace.
Are you looking for a powerful immune system hack? Well, our sponsor, Better Way Health, produces one of the highest quality beta-glucans on the market. And beta-glucan is a powerful immune system booster, being called the most effective dietary supplement for a healthy immune system by the American Nutraceutical Association. I personally take beta-glucan from Better Way Health to help keep my immune system strong. And I'm grateful they're offering all of my listeners a special discount code when you order today. Head over to nathancrane.com/beta-glucan for your special offer today. Go get a discount. Try it out for yourself. That's nathancrane.com/beta-glucan. Hey, so if you've been following me for any time now, you know that I often talk about Helin 951, the nitrogen fermented organic soy drink. I first learned about it at an integrative cancer event years ago, and I've been taking this myself for a long time. It's so potent and it has a strong flavor, so I add their organic mint powder to it, and it's easy to take any time of day. I usually take it in the mornings. You know, I'm constantly looking into natural health products, and the ones that catch my eye are the ones with years of proven results and the science and research to back them up. I love that Helin 951 checks all of these boxes. Made from a unique 100% organic soybean grown in the high mountains of Mongolia, Helin 951 has some incredible health properties. Just a few of the benefits are more energy, better sleep, detox, longevity, better immune function, and some fantastic anti-cancer compounds. The folks over at Helin have made a page just for our followers to learn more. You can head over to helin951.com/crane. That's H-A-E-L-A-N. 951.com/crane. They have special discounted packages there for you to get you started. And if you use the promo code CRANE, C-R-A-N-E, at checkout, they will also give you free shipping. So head over and grab this special offer for yourself and use the free shipping promo code CRANE, or just give them a call if that's easier for you. They are so easy to work with and have over 32 years in the industry. Again, that's helin951.com/crane. One of my good friends and integrative cancer doctors, Michael Karlfeldt, owns the Karlfeldt Center in Meridian, Idaho. And I'm really grateful that their team has sponsored this episode. Dr. Karlfeldt is a globally renowned naturopathic doctor in integrative oncology, and his center pioneers cutting-edge alternative therapies to combat cancer. They offer cutting-edge therapies, including high-dose IVs, ozone therapy, curcumin, mistletoe, photodynamic therapy, and many others within their 17,000 square foot advanced medical and wellness treatment facility. With decades of expertise, they offer comprehensive root cause medicine tailored to support your healing journey. You can begin your transformative experience with a complimentary 15-minute discovery call. You can call them at 208-338-8902. Or visit their website at thekarlfeldtcenter.com. Again, that's 208-338-8902. Or go to the website, thekarlfeldtcenter.com.
You know, that a spiritual path, and most religions have this sense of discovering something deep within yourself and finding lasting peace. And so yoga is not saying you need to follow a dogmatic religion in any way. It supports all religions. If you are following a religious path, it supports all of it. And if you're not, it also supports it. And it's saying that, you know, a spiritual path is one, it's you and your connection, you finding oneness with the whole universe, you actualizing yourself, becoming the best version of you that you can become, you being service in the world, make the world a better place, and you finding lasting peace. And if yoga brings you those things, and it has a beautiful blueprint to do that, then maybe that's a path for you.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Now, I do want to go a little deeper into the history of yoga and the religious aspect, because correct me if I'm wrong, but yoga was originally written about in the Vedas, right, which is the ancient texts of Hinduism, which go back somewhere between, they've been dated somewhere between 500 and 1500 BCE. So somewhere around 3000 plus years ago. Right now, I know there are scholars and people who believe they're much older than that, you know, 7,000 plus years, but that's kind of roughly, I think, what the consensus is.
Even before the Vedas, so the Vedas, so yoga was originally, you know, before things were written down and stuff, they were just passed down through song, through poem, through chanting, from teacher to student. I mean, they are very, very ancient before they were written down. And when you do go into history, there was a lot of things happening at once throughout the world. And so, there is definitely different paths of yoga. So when we go back through history, you know, the main paths of yoga were either intellectual, that you were studying the scriptures or you're studying all these ancient texts, you were following that path of intellect. There was also bhakti yoga, where you just felt a sense of something bigger than yourself, and it was a devotional practice. So you got jhana, bhakti, and then you had another path of just being of service, you know. And if you looked at that from modern time, it would be someone like a Mother Teresa, but there were yogis who were just on the path of being of service. So those were kind of more the traditional paths of yoga, without all of the extraneous things of when we look at the history. And like everything, things evolve. They're supposed to evolve. I mean, there could, if you look back at it, I mean, yoga has, again, like anything. There, you know, I always say there is no right, no wrong, no black, no white. There is always two sides of everything, right? And so yoga, if you look back at it, yeah, was there sexism in it? For, you know, a long time, women couldn't practice yoga. So there are things of probably all the past that, when we look at it, it can
when was that time frame? Do you know when was that time frame? Do you know? I never heard that.
Well, the Vedic period is really where yoga kind of started. That was kind of the beginning of it, and so starting at that point. So the Vedas is really the beginning of yoga. You know, and then you have the Vedas, and you have the Upanishads, you have Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, you have the Bhagavad Gita. So if you're looking at, you know, through these, all these different lessons of yoga, and then you come up to where we are today.
Wait, just clarify, back in the beginning, it was only for men, or that came later?
Beginning, it was, things were, you know, things throughout it, from my understanding, it was pretty much only for men, up until, you know, even in modern time, if we even come up to modern time, and by modern time, I mean, we're talking about the, you know, the 1900s and on, some of the more pronounced modern day yogis, Krishnamacharya was really one of the yogis who started bringing yoga out toward to the West from the East. And even with him, the first woman to ever practice him was a woman named Indra Devi. And this was in the early 1900s. And she really had to beg to be able to practice yoga with him and learn all of this. So, you know, it's ironic. And this is why I say good or bad, who knows what anything is until the end. But look at yoga now. Here's Indra Devi just being able to practice yoga at the early 1900s with, you know, some of the great yoga masters of that time that were studying under Krishnamachari, and look at yoga today. And yoga, when you go into a yoga studio, it's predominantly women.
Right. it's like the opposite now.
Exactly. So is it irony or not? You know? And so
well, it just goes to show you, it just goes to show you that, you know, how enlightened we think some of our ancestors were, you know, they still might have been missing some deeper components of enlightenment, you know.
Yes.
Because this practice does help you connect to compassion, to love, to inner peace, to awareness, to a deeper spirituality. But yet there's still the ego there. There's still, you know, men who want power and control, and, you know, women can't do it and that kind of stuff. Like, we still find that even, I think it's an important point not to judge or blame anybody on that, but to say, look, that's part of the human condition, that we're all, those who are focused on a spiritual path are all trying to transcend above that egoic self that makes us think that any one of us is better than anybody else, right?
That's right. And I think we've done that. I think yoga is meant to evolve. It's supposed to go through this phase. I mean, this is all the evolution of everything, right? Because if you can look back at anything and pick it apart, we weren't there. But this is all the evolution, and yoga is supposed to be this personal practice with you and whatever your true belief is, wherever you want to go with it.
Well, look at the time frame's interesting too. So, like, this is kind of an interesting thought experiment, right? So let's go back to, you know, around that time, and you said, and this is true for Buddhism as well, that most of those teachings were passed down verbally for many, many years, until they were ever written down by somebody. Mm-hmm. It was true even of the Bible. Like, people don't realize that people thought Jesus was teaching, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's killed, and his disciples, you know, write everything down. No, that they didn't write anything down until decades later. Number one, we know that through the historical text and the historical work that's been done, but same kind of thing where these teachings were passed down. And look at the time frame. Like, you also had a similar kind of monarchy in, you know, the Roman Catholic times. You had the you know, the burning of all the witches, which was really just any women who didn't agree with what the, you know, church was telling you at that time. They just burned them as witches. Millions of innocent women got burned as witches under the religious pretext, right? Of, like,
that's right.
You know, for the betterment of humanity through our spiritual beliefs, you know, under the guise of God and the Bible, if you will. And so, you know, that kind of grouped that together, that hundreds of years at that time, there was definitely, you know, people, men who were wanting to be in power and control. So who's to say that the original teachings weren't open to women, you know, way before they were written down? Maybe people who were writing them down were men and goes, you know what, I kind of think this is just for us. Let's have a men's group, you know. And I'm not bashing on men. I'm a man. I'm just saying, like,
you know. It's a beautiful point, Nathan, because how much is lost in translation and self-serving in some way. And, you know, when it comes to it, you know, and I do think spiritual practice and religion are two different things. Religion practiced by bad people does bad things. Religion practiced by good people does good things.
Exactly.
It's like so many things. It's like the same thing with wealth. Wealth for practice or spending for bad people does bad things, and wealth with, you know, practice giving from good people does good things. So I think we really have to take a look at that. And I think your point is really, really interesting of how much really was by ego and lost in translation. And still to this day, it's happening where, you know, anyone who becomes in a position of power, whether it's in yoga or a lot of other things, if the character isn't there, then lines get crossed. And then that's why it's really, your spiritual practice should be a practice of one with it.
Yeah,
of
that's,
you.
yeah, I agree. And I think, and I have this conversation with devout Christians quite often because, if you read the Bible, it's clear to somebody like myself who does not believe every single word in the Bible is the direct translation from God. Like there's so many texts in the Bible that when you read it, you're like, oh yeah, some arrogant man wrote that for sure. And so that's not what I would imagine God would be saying in the Bible. It talks about, it's okay to have slaves, treat your slaves nice, but like that wouldn't, God's gonna say, yeah, it's okay to have slaves, and yet we're all supposed to be equal human beings. Like, I don't think so. This is my perspective. But when you start to separate yourself from these ancient texts and go, okay, there absolutely is deep spirituality here. There's wisdom here. There's love and compassion and guidance in here that we can extract from and utilize in our own lives to have a deeper connection with God, with the universe, with spirit. And there is probably ego here, texts written by man that have been changed and updated to serve their own selfish needs and their own egoic levels of control and desire and power and greed. And you see that, I'm picking on the Bible for a little bit because I've researched the history of it quite a bit. You see that when many of the texts, ancient texts, were left out of the Bible intentionally. And there was, texts found, obviously, that we know about in the caves of Qumran that, many of these texts were left out of the Bible. And if they were in it, they would give totally different meaning to how we perceive that particular religion, and bring in so much more depth of love and compassion and wisdom. The ancient gospel of the ancient gospel of Thomas, I believe, was a fantastic one. There was left out. Many of these texts were left out intentionally. And so, that's by men in power and control trying to control people. Now, if you tell a devout Christian that, they're not going to be open to it, or they're going to deny it, or not be interested in that information in most cases. But I think that's true in most religions that we see, Hinduism, Islam, at the essence, as you just said, the essence generally is love, compassion, kindness, oneness. And then it's people who often take that and manipulate it for the gain of themselves over true love and compassion for others. And so I think it does come up to each one of us to go, okay, what's good from this? And let's utilize the good, and what seems maybe not so good, and maybe we don't do that thing.
I think it's, I think everybody has their own self-responsibility. I'm big on your, you need to choose whichever path you're taking. If you're going on a spiritual path, that you take self-responsibility for which way you want to go with it. I mean, I'm not here to say that any, I can only say what's worked for me. And I think, we have to just decide this is the exploration of the self through the self, which is the practice of yoga. The journey to the self through the self. And it's got some beautiful practices that help us get there. But ultimately, it is up to us. We have to take self-responsibility for being the creators of what we want and what we believe. And we cannot just hand it off. Spirituality to me is something that cannot be passed down, like religion is sometimes passed down from parent to child to parent to child. Spirituality can't be passed down. It's not something you can check off your list that you've done. Spirituality has to be discovered by yourself, through your exploration. So this is where I differentiate quite a bit from religion. Look, I grew up in a Presbyterian church. I went to an Episcopal school from 7th to 12th grade. I really didn't, it didn't connect to me at all. I tried, and this was trying to be handed down to me, but it didn't connect. And it truly wasn't until I went on this journey of yoga that I started to connect with my inner self and find this sense of something bigger, this practice of awareness, of consciousness, and unconditional love that was developing through the study of yoga that I wasn't finding by something being passed down to me. So that to me is the biggest, biggest difference. And you know, we need to take self-responsibility to be the creator of our own spiritual path.
Mm, I love that. Earlier, you talked quite a bit about the eight limbs of yoga. Can you just list all eight of those briefly?
Okay, here we go. All right, so now I'll kind of try to keep this simple and explanation for everyone, because this gives us, it's from Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, and the Yoga Sutras are these beautiful little gems of wisdom, again, that have been passed down. And the eight limbs, so ashta means eight in Sanskrit, anga means limb, so this is an eight-limbed path. And all it is it's a nice little blueprint, a beautiful blueprint that makes total sense, that's lasted for thousands of years, to help us on the spiritual path, because on our own, we may get lost. So the first thing is something called the yamas. And the yamas are, there's five of them. And so this is really, how do we conduct ourselves out in the world? The first one is something called ahimsa, which means kindness. This is the science of kindness, of compassion for all living things. So this is the first and foremost. And even if you think of physicians, you know, their number one tenet is really do no harm. And it's similar to this. Be kind in the world to all living things, to all sentient beings. So kindness, compassion, this is the very first one out in the world. The second one is something called satya, which means truthfulness. Be honest, you know, keep your word. This next one is asteya, and this is non-stealing. So don't take things that don't belong to you. The next one is something called aparigraha. And aparigraha means not hoarding, not living a life of greed, of accumulating more than you need. And then the fifth one is something called brahmacharya. And brahmacharya, it's been kind of diluted to mean moderation and everything. But if we go back to breaking it down a little bit more, it means sexual restraint. How can I put this simply? Not harvesting your seed where you don't really need. So basically what it's saying is don't spread your seed all over with something you may not be able to take care of in that garden. So moderation, be modest. And so these five things, if you think about them, you're going to sleep pretty good at night if you're not doing that. You're not going to be having a bunch of baggage because you're not cruel, you're not lying, you're not stealing, you know, you're not doing things that are going to weigh heavy on you. So that's the very first one, be a good person out in the world.
So that's just the first, that's just the first limb of yoga.
That's just the first one. It has five principles of it. Mm-hmm. And the first thing it's asking you, it has nothing to do with, can you get your heels on the ground in a downward dog. Has nothing to do with that. It's just, are you a good person out in the world?
Right? I'm not. You're not a good person if you can't balance, you know, on your head in the yoga studio. Sorry, you're just.
If you can't
failed number one already.
And you know what's so funny is people will come to a yoga class, you know, the asanas, the postures, and they will start judging people, like if someone can do a headstand or a handstand or some yoga pose, advanced yoga pose, that somehow they're a better person, which is the craziest thing. Like, oh, they must be a really good person in the world. Look at, no, they had 20 years of gymnastics training. You know?
Right. And somehow, so, yeah. But somehow it's going to make you more connected to God, you know, if you stand on your head, right?
So it's not. It's the journey to get there of learning about yourself. That's where the poses come in.
I love that. I'm glad you brought it back up. I wanted to touch back on that, because it is very often through the struggle in our physical life, through the challenges that we experience daily, monthly, yearly, small and big challenges, that we do discover the most about ourselves, that we do discover deeper reservoirs of wisdom and potential within ourselves. Going through an injury as an athlete can teach you a lot about yourself, about patience, about determination, about willpower, about focus, about self-love, right? Or the loss of a loved one, or, you know, the loss of a business, or business failure, all of these challenges in life, or physical challenges, disease. You know, I've been working with cancer patients for over a decade, and the ones who generally survive many, many years and thrive, people who I call cancer conquerors, you know, they looked at cancer. It wasn't always right away. It happened over months and years, but they began to look at cancer as a wake-up call, as an opportunity, rather than something that's happening to me, as something that happened for me. And I learned from this diagnosis to take better care of myself, to get the toxins out of my life, to heal mentally, emotionally, to heal trauma, right? To love others, to spend more time with my family, to quit that terrible job that was sucking my soul out of my body and start doing something I love doing. All those things that people know in their hearts that they want and are often too afraid to do, the people who look at cancer as a wake-up call and an opportunity often do significantly better than those who don't, who take it on as, this is God punishing me, or it's happened to me, my life sucks, everything's over. You know, it's a massive change of mindset that shifts everything, right?
Yeah. And if you have that perspective that whatever's happening in your life is there to help you grow, to get to the other place, to help you, again, self-actualize that. So you know, karma, a lot of people talk about karma, and they have, you know, when something bad goes wrong, they blame it on karma. Oh, that person had bad karma, or whatever. I look at karma as this way. It's a speed bump. So when something happens, it's a little speed bump telling you, hey, you're going in the wrong direction. Slow down. You need to go in this direction. It's to help you move into that correct direction that you are meant to go. And so when the big health challenge comes, when, you know, the relationship breakup comes, when there's a financial hardship, all of these things, if you can look at it, hey, it's here to wake me up. I've been sleeping through this, and it's here to wake me up. I'll give you a sample. In 2020, at the height of the pandemic, a few days before Christmas, I was riding my electric bike downhill. The front wheel fell off. I went over the handlebars. I don't remember anything. I woke up in trauma care, and my face was super jacked up. I mean, I had tar and asphalt embedded down to the bone. I had sunglasses on. Fortunately, I had a helmet, so that was good. But it had cut like right up to my eye. Things were really jacked up. Woke up in trauma care, height of the pandemic, everything's chaos. And all I remember is the lady stitching me up. I heard her say to the doctor, ask her, have you ever done this before? And she said, no, because they were pulling in people from all over. And I woke up at that time. I said, hey, is that my face? Don't you think maybe we should have somebody who's done it? That's the first thing I remember. But long story short, you know, I had a lot of I looked a little bit like Mike Tyson, if you know the boxer Mike Tyson. He had all the tattoos all over his face. My face kind of looked like that. And I developed this big thing on my eye called a chalazion. It looked like a giant wart, really ugly, plus all this. At that time, I got a notification that I was being awarded the IDEA World Health and Fitness Instructor of the Year, a very big award in our industry for health and fitness professionals. And I was going to have to give a big talk acceptance to like thousands of people. And my face is all jacked up. I got this giant thing on my eye. And I was a mess. But the reason I realized I had this thing on my eye that was coming up is because I was looking through the world since my accident through angry eyes. Mm. And what do I mean by that? I live in San Diego, and I have this beautiful garden. And I used to walk through the garden and look at the flowers and see how beautiful they are and just like all the beauty around. And after my accident, I'd walk through and I'd see, oh, that plant's dead. Oh, that's dying. Remove. And all I was seeing is what was wrong. I could not see what was right. And so I realized the body becomes the mind becomes the body. This is the mind-body connection. And I realized because of my crap thoughts of all this negativity since my accident, I saw the world through angry eyes. And so I developed this big, ugly thing on my eye. And so I was like, Stacy, you teach this stuff. You know what to do. So I created a mantra, and the mantra is a mind vehicle. It's helping your mind retrain. And the mantra was, I see everyone and everything with abundant joy and unconditional love, including myself, my health, and my healing. And I now, every time I caught myself with that negative thought, I would say that mantra. I see everyone and everything with abundant joy and unconditional love, including myself, my health, and my healing. Sometimes I'd have to do that 40 to 50 times a day, catching those constant and negative thoughts as a result of my trauma. And guess what happened? My chalazion healed, never came back. They're notorious for coming back. And so the reality is whatever's happening, your mind's, and when we talk about the liberation of the mind's the most powerful thing. And so if we have all this crap going on in our mind, those same redundant, recycled, unnecessary thoughts and emotions that are contributing all this stress, it needs somewhere to go. And it's going to manifest somewhere in the physical and show up. And so we really need to stand guard to the doorway of our mind and decide, what are we letting in? What are we thinking? If we want to change things in the body. And this is the body-mind connection. And yoga does such a beautiful job of helping us do that, of helping us notice when we're beating ourselves up, we're in a really challenging asana or yoga pose, and noticing, oh my God, my shoulders are way up here. I'm all stressed up. Oh, can you relax your shoulders down? Can you broaden the collarbones? Can, instead of slumping and slouching, it starts to bring all this to awareness. So you start to shift. And now when the body shifts, it feels better. Guess what? So does the mind.
Right.
Mind, body, body, mind.
Well, and really yeah. The recognition that we can direct and kind of control how we feel in those moments through our thinking, through our breathing, right? Literally, I mean, that's why I do ice baths, is because I can calm down my nervous system when it's, you know, extremely aggravated, right? Intensity, that, mm-hmm. An intense yoga position is really pushing, sometimes can be pushing you a little bit to the limit. Jumping in an ice bath will definitely push your nervous system to the limit.
Yes.
But can you take really deep, relaxing breaths and calm down your nervous system and accept the uncomfortable,
and
really be with it instead of judging it and trying to change it? And I think that's obviously one of the beautiful benefits of yoga, mentally and emotionally, not to mention physically, or ice baths, or anything challenging that you put yourself through, a CrossFit workout. If you can keep yourself, calm and not so negative about it, I think it all has that benefit. And did you say your wreck was on your bike was 2020? Was that in 2020?
Yeah, 2020.
That was only 4 years ago. That's crazy. I don't know if you remember, but remember we did an interview like 2 weeks or something after that happened.
Yeah.
And you told me all about it. And you're like, yeah, I got this.
And my face is all jacked up.
I'm like, you're fine. You look beautiful. Don't worry about it. You're like, okay.
It'll be great. Well,
I didn't realize that was already 4 years ago. That's crazy.
I know. Crazy. Crazy how time flies. But you said something there. When you take yourself to the edge, and you just said that with the ice bath, that's what yoga does. It's like, to the postures, it's training people in a simple way, how to come to their edge. And what is the edge? The edge is really that place where if you go even a little bit further, you're going to hurt yourself. If you back off even a little, you're slacking off. And that's the edge. And it's training the mind to know where your edge is, to have that intellect to know where the edge is. And then when you're at that edge, can you pause? Can you breathe into it and know? And now can you train your mind knowing that just on the other side of all this discomfort lies your breakthrough. On the other side of all the uncomfortable lies your freedom. And so what you're doing is, now again, you're working and you're training your mind always, I'm here in the sympathetic. I'm all like, ugh. Can you calm down? Can you find the stillness in that chaos? Come back into the parasympathetic, stay in play, relax, stay here. Still working at that edge, and know that at the other side of it, now you're going to break through. Now you're going to find it. So it's this beautiful, very fertile training ground for that.
Speaking of forms of yoga, types of yoga, are there specific forms of yoga that you would recommend people experiment with and try, and other ones that you recommend or wouldn't necessarily recommend that people do, in terms of like if I were, let's say, like I've tried a bunch of different types of yoga over the years, and I haven't done yoga for quite a while. But let's say I want to get back into yoga, but I'm interested in the physical benefit side, but I'm just as much, if not more, interested in the mental, emotional, spiritual side. Like, are there specific mm-hmm. forms of yoga that I would want to look for?
Well, again, it's a personal journey, but I can give just maybe a little bit of feedback on that based on the Ayurveda, which is the sister science to yoga. Ayurveda means the science of life, and Ayurveda it has everything from surgeons to medical practices. But basically in Ayurveda, there's a beautiful axiom that says opposites cure, which means that if you are too far in one, let's say you're too hard, that you need some softness. You're too soft, you need some hardness. You're too yin, you need some yang. You need too yang, you need some yin. So basically what it's saying is there's different constitutions for different people. So like
I need to do a lot more yin yoga is what you're saying.
I kind of am. So if you are like Nathan and you are like CrossFit and go, go, go and kind of type A and like, you know, really going, you have all of this kind of spiciness to you. If you're imbalanced, you have too much. Not only like you, if you're imbalanced, you're okay. But if you're imbalanced, you don't want to go do a hot power yoga in a heated room with, you know, hot, you're re-stimulating all that spiciness, throwing you more out of balance. So what you might want to do is do a softer type of yoga where you're softening into it, and so that you come back into balance. And vice versa, if you tend to be someone who prefers to not exercise at all, or maybe you just don't, your idea of exercise is drawing a warm bath, popping a Gatorade and calling it a workout, well, then maybe what you need to do is more of a stronger type of practice to bring you into balance. So if we look at just even you're on different days, if you are too run down, maybe you do something softer. If you're too dull, do something more challenging and more vigorous, just to bring yourself back into balance. So that's one way to look at it. But then on the flip side, if you take an athlete, a lot of times when you say yin, Nathan, it's interesting. So then yin yoga is a style of yoga where you are really holding a pose for a very long time, and you're letting the fascia, which is like a wetsuit on the outside of your muscle, you're trying to get that to release as well. For a lot of athletes who are they're super strong, but maybe really locked up and wound up, to lay there still like that is excruciating. It's very difficult because the muscles are so wound up. So for them, they may need more of what we call a vinyasa, movement to breath, where it's more mobility, movement. Come on, let's get the body moving to the breath. So the body unfolds a little differently. So again, it's going to depend on the person. I try not to say that any one thing is right for one person, because it can depend on the day. It can depend on so many factors.
Now, is there types of yoga, if people are more interested in the spiritual side, specifically Kundalini yoga, like, are there other forms of yoga that you recommend that are much less about the body and more about mental, emotional, spiritual?
Yes. So again, what I would take that back to is the teacher of the yoga. Is the teacher, are they versed in the more spiritual aspects of yoga? Have they studied the Vedas, the Upanishads, Patanjali's Yoga Sutra? Have they studied the ancient texts? Have they really dove into some of the deeper layers? Could they teach a class without any asana, without any movement? Could they teach a yoga class on that? Then they're probably going to be a pretty wonderful teacher along if you want to work through the body first. So, you know, a good yoga class will have an element of all of it. If you're talking about the physical practice, it will keep the body safe. That's first and foremost, because again, most people come to yoga via the body. The body is fertile garden to work with your mind and connect to your spirit. It is such fertile ground for it. So, but a good yoga teacher will help you be safe in the body, open the body, you feel better, work with the mind, help bring in these things that help steady your mind and make you more mindful, where you're paying attention on purpose in the present moment without any judgment, comparison, competitiveness. They're training the mind so that then you connect to that deeper part of your inner self. And so really it's not so much the style of yoga, but it's more the teacher of yoga that can bring in that those gems of wisdom for you, and in and also understanding meeting people where they're at, like who are you talking to, and can you make it welcoming for them? So if someone's coming in, they're an athlete, they've never done any of this, let's feel good in the body and drop those nuggets with them. Oh man, you know, there's something that's happening here. When I leave this yoga class, I have a harmony physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Ah, there's more to this than I thought.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So going back to the eight limbs, we covered the one, which was the five kind of pillars.
Yeah.
What's number two?
So number two is something called the niyamas, and there's five pillars with that too as well. So the niyamas are really, but they're fascinating. I hope you find this fascinating. So the five pillars of the niyamas really start to turn it inwards towards you. And so the first one is something called satya, and this is cleanliness of both your body and your mind. And so what it's saying, and I'm going to bring it back to the body because there's a lot of athletes on here, and you know, there's a lot of people who do love to move the body. So if you even think of coming, as you come to a yoga asana practice, and asana again is the body movement, we come with a clean body and a clean mind. So in the traditional practice, you've actually showered, you're clean, you're not coming in all dirty and, you know, after, you know, a run or something like that with dirty feet and dirty hands and, you know, stuffing a bunch of food in your mouth, you come in clean of body, ready to present yourself to something bigger than yourself. You come in clean of mind with good thoughts, and you stand at the top of your mat ready to practice clean body, clean mind.
Why didn't anybody ever tell me that?
Yeah,
because why didn't anybody ever tell me that? I mean, I was going, you know, Cheetos and Doritos and dirty feet. No, I'm kidding.
I literally have people like run in with an In-N-Out burger bag, like jump in, you know, they came off the beach with tar on their beach, ready to go. And I'm like,
okay, today's class is about cleanliness.
I've had teachers do that where I've had to kind of explain to them, look, you know, this is not how you present yourself if you're going, you know, so it's making it a devotional practice would be a really great step. And this is inner, like be clean of body and mind. Your thoughts and your body go hand in hand. Yeah. And then the next one is something called santosha, and santosha means contentment. Learn to appreciate all that you have and see the perfection in where you're at. Most people run through life stressed out, trying to get to the next thing, but can you find a place of contentment? And this really works on your mat. Again, I bring it back to the body because that's where people start. You're in a yoga pose. Can you appreciate where you're at? You're coming in and maybe you've got an injury in your hip or your hamstring or your shoulder or your neck. Can you just appreciate it? Use everything that you have that can work and treat some love and kindness towards that injury. Don't quit. Don't say you can't do it. Just use what you have and treat the other part that's healing with love and kindness so that you don't quit. Part of my mission as a yoga teacher and a yoga and wellness professional is to help people practice yoga for a lifetime, because I know if you practice yoga properly for a lifetime, you'll have more health and happiness than if you didn't practice yoga. And that's all I promise. I'm not going to promise it's going to heal every injury, it's going to fix your migraine, your sciatica, none of that. But I will tell you, if you do it properly for a lifetime, you'll have more health and happiness than if you don't practice. But so contentment, santosha. And then the next one balances that contentment. It's called tapas or tapas. And this one is really the zest, the zeal, the disciplined effort of the practice, which means you're going to have to be pretty devoted and disciplined to stay with it. And so we balance the contentment with also working hard on this path of yoga. And so it's the balance of the two. Because you're not going to stay with it if you're not disciplined and devoted on it. And if you don't feel that you're on this journey towards lasting peace, you won't stay with it. So discipline and devotion to pause. And then the next one is something we call Svadhyaya. And this is really, this is the exploration of the self. This is the practice of yoga, the self-study. And I can't think of anything greater to study than yourself. To learn the most, this is the deepest self-development, personal growth program that you could ever be on, because it's the study of yourself. And so through yoga, sometimes it's done through chanting, through reading spiritual texts, through journaling, through, it's all about, can you learn more about yourself through this practice? And then the fifth one of the niyams is something called Ishvara Pranadhana. And this is really the surrender to something bigger than yourself. And again, you can personify that however you want. Your personification of it is what you want. Call it what you want. But you're believing that during the chaos, during all of the trauma, the tragedy, the tough times of your life, when you're standing there in the divorce, in the health challenge, in the cancer diagnosis, in the financial hardship, in the loss of a loved one, whatever it is, that through all of that noise and crazy going on, can you find an anchor of stillness within yourself? Can you surrender to something bigger than yourself? Call it what you want. But this is the Ishvara Pranadhana. So these five niyamas, or second limbs, are designed to help you through the journey of the self, learn more about yourself. And so you notice these first two say nothing about a yoga pose. There's nothing there that is talked about a yoga pose, which gets us to the third limb, which is asana, which are the yoga pose. And the word asana literally means to sit. Can you take a comfortable seat so the body's not a distraction? So the asana is really, this is a practice to generate health so you have better health. It's not a sport where we're trying to compete, but it's literally training the body so that the discomfort that comes in the body, we're healing it so that you can sit still. Because if you're trying to sit still and meditate, meditation is so challenging for so many people. Most people can't sit still because they're like, oh, my shoulder, oh, my back. Oh, this is like, there's all these distractions. So all these asanas are designed to help you have more comfort in your body, to regulate your health, to bring greater health to the physical body, which leads us into the fourth limb, which is pranayama. Prana is your life force energy. Yama means to extend your life force energy. Typically, it's done through the breath. So we use the breath, and the breath is a vehicle that runs through, believe it or not, 72,000 pathways, energy pathways in the body called nadis. So when we're using the breath, the vehicle is the breath running through all of these energetic pathways through our body. And when the pathways are open and free, because we freed this up, the body is not a distraction. Now we're bringing more clarity and vitality to the mind. So we're bringing it up from our kind of our lower consciousness. There's a chakra system some of you may have heard of that runs from the deep pelvic floor right up to the crown of the head. Now we're pumping up the prana, your life force energy. We're capturing it, we're regulating it, we're directing it into higher consciousness. So we're bringing it up through the vehicle of the breath.
A lot of people have become familiar with breath work, more recently, obviously because of Wim Hof and kind of how he's helped bring breath work. He originally learned his breathing practices from his yoga practice, from yogic traditions, and then kind of modified his method slightly. So it's very similar to Breath of Fire, which anyone who's ever experienced yoga for many years, I remember 15 years ago doing yoga in Encinitas, California, and doing Breath of Fire and feeling what that feels like. And this is a very, very ancient practice. So a lot of people, now that breath work's kind of taken off and there's breath work classes and all of that, many people probably don't realize that breath work originates from yoga right? It's multi-thousand-year-old practice, and there are many forms of pranayamas, of breathing practices that come from these ancient multi-thousand-year-old yogic traditions.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Nathan, because quite honestly, a lot of the things that are happening now, and actually with science and science backing up, we're coming, it's full circle back to ancient wisdom. Yep. So if you look at some of the thought leaders today, or people who have maybe taken whatever they're doing and magnetized it out in the world, someone like Wim Hof with, you know, a specialized breath, he learned it from yoga. Take someone like Dr. Joe Dispenza, who does a lot of work with the mind-body connection. He had a yoga studio in San Diego. He came from a yoga background. If you look at a lot of the people, a lot of the meditation folks who are out there, they all came from yoga backgrounds. So yoga has been the ancient science, the foundation of all of this. But like we talked about at the beginning of this conversation, it's meant to evolve. It's meant to evolve without losing its real intent. So if this is just all part of the evolution, and now science is catching up. And once science is catching up, now people are all like, oh, I can validate it now. I can verify it.
Right.
But it's what yogis have known for centuries, because they've known it through the inside. They didn't need validation on the outside because they already knew it inside. They're already living it. But in a modern day world, we need science to validate everything. But science is circling back around, trust me, to the ancient wisdom, which is really fascinating.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've been noticing and talking about that for years, that kind of science, I see science today as kind of the language of our modern time. But really, our ancient ancestors already discovered that most of these things thousands of years ago without the modern tools of science today. Science is helpful, it's useful, it has its place, but it also can be used for bad, also can be used to lead people astray from the truth, also can be lied about. And, you know, I mean, there are top editors of the top scientific journals on record saying over 50% of the published science in this top respected journal, I think it was actually the top editor of Nature Journal, if I'm not mistaken, said 50% of it is false, right? So it's like, yeah, science, modern science is great. It's useful. I like it. I use it and talk about it all the time. It helps the left analytical mind, left
That's
analytical
right.
part of the brain. But at the end of the day, you know, if something works, you can feel it. You can sense it. If you
That's
practice,
right.
if you practice yoga, you know, for 2, 3, 4 months, you notice a change in yourself. You know, if you practice breath work every day, you know, you notice a change in yourself. If you exercise every day for a few months, you notice a change in yourself. Yeah, you know, science is great for kind of validating these things, but you can validate it for yourself just by doing the thing and seeing the benefit that you experience from it.
Well, I practiced under the Krishnamacharya lineage. We talked about that under a teacher called Patabi Joyce, who was the Ashtanga Vinyasa. He was my teacher, but he spoke very little English, but he used to have a saying that was got very popular called, "Do your practice, all is coming," because he spoke very little English. And basically what he was saying is that it's through the experience, the practice, this is experiential. It's a spiritual practice, and it goes back to what I was saying about spirituality. It is not something that someone can hand it to you. Someone can't hand you the science behind the poses, the science behind the breath work, the science behind meditation, and all of a sudden you're like, yeah, got it. I'm living, you know, that balanced body, awake and calmness. I'm connected to... It doesn't work that way. You have to do it. You have to experience it yourself. And this is where I go back to self-responsibility. You don't learn to swim by watching YouTube videos. You have to get in the water. You have to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So. All right. Number 5, I think we were on.
So 5 is, but we went through these a little bit. I'll go through them quickly. Is pratyahara. This is, again, withdrawing the senses away from all the noise outside of yourself. So, and it's so interesting because you may find on this journey through a consistent practice that the connection that you find with your inner self is so much more beautiful and fascinating than anything your senses can perceive from the external stimuli. And this is really the journey. This journey within is so beautiful. It's so fascinating. What's happening inside of you is truly so much more fascinating than any of that external stimuli that's bombarding you. So this is the pratyahara, withdraw from all that noise. And, you know, because the quieter you become, the more you start to hear, and the more you start to hear, now you start to focus and concentrate, which comes to the sixth limb, which is that dhyana. And again, your focus and concentration. So yoga has a beautiful job. And again, I'm going to bring it back to the body because that's where people are starting. In the yoga asanas, the poses, it is designed for your focus and concentration, not just to balance your body, but every single one of those yoga poses has a specific gaze. We call them drishtis. There's 9 different ones, and every single yoga pose is designed to have a specific gaze or specific drishti focal point. It's done for a couple of reasons. Physiologically, it keeps your body in alignment. Psychologically, mentally, it's designed to keep you from your wandering eyes. Most of our energy is given away by looking around, darting around, looking at everything. We're giving all our energy away. And during the asana practice, during the yoga practice, it's designed to increase your prana, your life force energy. Look, I don't really believe in age. Like, age is not something that's important to me. Energy is. So I don't care what someone's age is. I care what is their energy. It's way more important. So the asana practice is designed to cultivate and regulate more life force energy, more prana, more chi. So we have a specific gaze so that we're not looking around. We don't traditionally in a yoga practice have a bunch of mirrors right in front of us. Oh, am I doing it just right? Do I look good? Oh, look at that person. They're really good. Wow, now I'm all in judging, comparison, competing with someone rather than tuning into myself. My eyes are darting all over, giving away my energy. Rather than focusing my energy, training my mind to concentrate in one spot. So through the asana practice, it's just that fertile garden again for all of these 8 limbs. It will teach all of them within a asana practice. That's why I say the body of this is very important on the spiritual path, because it's giving us tools to train the mind. So now my mind's in one place. While my mind's in one place, I'm totally focused and concentrated. I notice when I'm looking away. I notice when, oh, I'm judging, I'm comparing. Oh, stop, cancel that, come back. Mind wanders, notice the wandering mind, come back to my focus and concentration without judgment. Now, when I'm doing that, now I'm increasing the tensile strength of my mind to be able to focus and concentrate. And then when I can do that without it being unbroken, it leads me into the 7th limb, which is dhyana, that meditative state. Now I'm in the state of meditation where I'm stepping into the unknown now. And when the meditation now becomes unbroken, then it turns into samadhi, and samadhi is the 8th limb. And this is where the real inner journey begins, to be one with everything as it is, to experience Satchidananda, truth, consciousness, bliss. Sat is truth, chitta is a consciousness, and ananda is bliss. To experience truth, consciousness, and bliss, this is the unending love that unifies all things. So now we've stepped into that place of samadhi. And this is the 8th limb. And so on this journey, all of these yoga poses, not only are we bringing balance in the body so we can sit still, not only are we increasing our prana, our life force energy, and there's all kinds of subtle energetic anatomy that goes along with it, of learning how to move our energy from the inside out. Not only are we waking up the energy centers running up through the spine, the chakras, but now we're learning how to really work with the mind. And so this is a system that is so vast and so deep and has so many parts to it that we can never stop learning. But the place we start is the simplest place is with our body, because, you know, everyone's jumping on the meditation bandwagon, which is beautiful, but so many people are jumping off just as quickly, because they cannot sit still with themselves and their thoughts. They need something that's going to guide them along. They just can't be still with themselves and their thoughts. And the asana helps train that, helps us to break down the ego. The ego is not your amigo, okay? So we've got to learn how to bring it down a little bit.
You just reminded me of a peyote ceremony I did. This is probably 5, 6, 7 years ago. I was in Taos, New Mexico. And the first and only time so far that I've done a peyote ceremony. And it was with these elders who had been leading peyote ceremony. It's like their church, these Native American elders. They kind of called it their church. And every weekend for like decades. I mean, these guys were doing this like every weekend for decades. And you go, so they build, it's a whole ceremony. They build a teepee, put it up. And you know, there's prayers and ceremony, intention, and all this stuff. And then you go in, sit in a circle inside the teepee, and you go in at sunset, and then you do the ceremony. You drink the peyote and eat the peyote. We drank it. I don't know if we ate any. And sat there cross-legged, so sitting through from sunset to sunrise, right? So it was like however many hours it was, probably at least 12 hours. It might have been more. I can't remember what time of year it was. But I definitely could not sit cross-legged for more than like 30 minutes. So here I am, you know, trying to experience this deep, you know, psychedelic spiritual peyote experience, and all I can think about the whole time is like how uncomfortable I am, right?
Yeah.
And here they are, these 60, 70 year old, there's three of them. They were in their 60s, and I think the eldest was like in his 70s, sitting down cross-legged, you know, singing and drumming and talking, and all of a sudden would jump up like a 5-year-old kid, jump straight off the ground, run around the teepee. Yeah, go sit with the other guy's spot and send him there, and then jump right into the cross-legged and drumming and singing and stuff, and then jump up and move around. And all I'm thinking about is like, how are these old guys so limber, and I'm over here just like suffering the whole freaking time? And like, I left that. That was probably my biggest, you know, realization from the whole thing, was like how messed up my body is compared to them, you know, who are so limber at such an old age. And here I am stiff and tight and, you know, young, I don't even know. I mean, late 20s, early 30s, however old I was, probably early 30s. Like, how are these guys so limber? Well, they do it every week. They're sitting cross-legged for hours. They're getting up, sitting down, always cross-legged, probably rarely ever sitting in chairs and couches, things like that. And so they're basically doing their own form of yoga, if you will, you know, week after week after week after week for decades. And they were just so limp physically. Talk about trying to be comfortable sitting. I mean, you talk about asana is like literally, you know, being able to sit comfortably so you can get in these deeper stages. Yeah, we can do it on a lazy boy recliner, put on meditation.
But then you'll probably fall asleep.
Yeah, I don't, but I know my wife does, right? You know, Lou's like, she, you know, 2 minutes and she's out, like, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've been practicing meditation for probably 18 years now that, sometimes it's actually hard for me to go to sleep because I'm in meditation. Like, it's the opposite for me. Doesn't matter what situation I am, but still going back to the physical part, like, I think we all need that as we age, right? Is to have that limber flexibility. I mean, so that we can
and strength.
Feel better. And the strength, 100%.
So I think when you say that, I think there is a misconception that yoga is just about flexibility, but yoga is truly about healing the whole person. So there is a difference between fitness and health, and yoga is definitely on the health side. So fitness typically is the physical ability to perform an activity or exercise. You know, and as I was an athlete, my kids were athletes, you're an athlete. So you are training for something specific. And with that, look, I love sports, but typically that brings the body out of balance because you're training for something specific. And so it's throwing the body off. And yoga's there. It's not a system to train for athletics. However, it does support athletics. So what it does, it brings you in and you go, oh my gosh, my hips are so tight sitting here. Ah, the yoga practice now will help you. You've got too much strength. too much stability, you need to have more flexibility. So when people come to class, it's both. One's not better than the other. I have people who come to class that are like a wet noodle. They literally have no stability. They're like, whoa, whoa. They have no stability. They're a wet noodle. And then on the other side, big muscle bound folks that come in that have, only lifted weights and they're overdeveloped in certain areas and they can't reach their arm over their head they can't straighten their arm. It's got to be bent. So yoga is designed to take where you're too hard, can't straighten my arm, to be a little softer and a little extended. You're like a wet noodle, too soft. Let's bring stability and strength. It is designed to bring you back into balance, literally, to bring you back into balance. And it's also a system that addresses all of you, your endocrine system, your respiratory system, your hormonal system. It is designed to heal the whole person. So there's a big difference between fitness, exercise, and health. And that was my big aha. We circle back to where we started, where I started as a swimmer, an athlete. Then I went to, teaching every fitness craze you can imagine. I taught every single fitness craze out there. And I would wake up in the morning stiff, tired, and sore. Now, granted, I was teaching a lot, but I would wake up, drag myself out, just not feeling great. Like I was super fit, but not feeling great. And then I discovered yoga, and it completely changed everything for me. I started to heal those areas that were overdeveloped, and I got more space, more freedom. Those places where I was weak, I didn't even know I was weak, I got more strength. So for example, I never knew I was super weak in my inner thighs, the adductors. My external rotators of my outer hips were so overdeveloped that my inner thighs just got weaker and less used, and my big glutes would take over. And so now I was learning, I was like, holy smokes, I've got to get some freedom in my glutes and these external rotators. And I need to get some strength in my inner thighs. I need to wake that up. So I brought myself back into balance. And vice versa, when we're talking chest or shoulders, where are we overdeveloped and where are we underdeveloped? And a proper practice of yoga designed to bring you back into physical balance. So when you sit for long periods of time, you're not like, my back hurts, my hip hurts, I cannot wait to get out of this. You are actually comfortable, your body feels balanced, and you feel comfortable. And now your mind's not just concentrated on your discomfort. It's open to deeper levels of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that takes time.
It takes time. Again, it goes back to that discipline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Takes a daily practice for sure. And one final point, I know we have to wrap up. Some of the most famous bodybuilders on the planet actually are incredibly flexible. So people think, there's this old misconception. They think that building muscle, actually you have to stay tight all the time and flexibility hurts you and hurts your gains and that kind of stuff. But actually, and people can go research this on their own, there are some of the most famous bodybuilders out there who could do the splits, who have like unbelievable flexibility. And that flexibility actually, probably help them long-term avoiding injury and fascial tension building up and causing too much tightness and pain. So there is definitely absolute truth to the fact that we need both. We need flexibility, we need mobility and strength, especially as we're aging. These things are just so important for helping our long-term health. But Stacy, this was awesome.
On the flip side, the one thing I'd say on that, on the flip side, Nathan, and I totally agree, sometimes I get gymnasts in, and if you look at a male gymnast, they have some of the most defined, and female gymnasts, some of the most defined physiques you can see, plus extraordinary flexibility. But on the other side of that, sometimes it's gone too far where, actually as they age, they have back pain. And one of the greatest Olympians, I think it's Mary Lou Retton, who was a wonderful female gymnast. She used to do commercials for like arthritic pain because it was too much. So again, when we yoga is not being excessive, it's about being very balanced. So for athletes, it's such a wonderful thing to help you recognize where those muscular imbalances are, where your structural irregularities are, bring awareness to it, help you work through it so that you have more comfort and ease in your body. And yeah, that's really where it kind of differs. It's not trying to be extreme at all. It's trying to support. It supports whatever you come to the practice with, if you'll let it. And so, as I said, one's not better than the other. It is really designed to treat every, in fact, the body's designed to be equal, but also the poses are. People come, there's metaphor, and I could share metaphor after metaphor of the asana practice. This is why it's important. People think one pose is better than another pose. It's not. A handstand is not better than standing in a mountain pose. It's not better. All poses are designed to be treated equally in the mind. And it's a metaphor to take off your mat, that we are designed to treat everybody equally. No one's above or below anyone else. And so when we're on our mat, we know that we're not above or below anyone else. The pose that we do, whether or not you can do the pose and make it look good, or whether you're screaming in your body, doesn't matter. You're not beneath or above anyone else, right? It's just you exploring yourself going, hey, you know, I do CrossFit. I'm super strong here, but I'm locked up. Okay, not a problem. I'm going to open up my hips more. I'm going to come back into balance. I'm not above or beneath anyone. It's all equal. So this is, again, that path to oneness, as there's just so many lessons in yoga, if we will let them come to us.
Yeah, beautiful. Now, you teach online, right? Do you still do classes and private consulting, and you have an online group of people?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so if people want to work with you, wait, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm on socials, of course. It's Yoga Namastacy. My website's Yoga Namastacy. So it's a play of words. And my socials are all Yoga Namastacy, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all of that, and my website. But it's a play on words. So the word yoga, of course, and then the word namaste. So that word namaste has always had a really... from the first time I heard it, for some reason, it really just touched my heart. So namaste, N-A-M-A-S-T. And instead of the E at the end, some very funny students, front row students of mine, way before websites even happened, at the end of class, when I would say namaste, they would say namastacy, thinking they were very clever. And then when websites came along, they said, you should call your website that. So yoga namastacy. But that word namaste, and I'll just kind of wrap up with this, has always had this deep meaning for me. And one time I was teaching a class, I had this class, it was on at 12 o'clock, a lunchtime class. It would get very crowded, very full. And I had one lady who was always in the far back right corner with a wall on one side and the wall behind her. A lot of people in yoga love to gravitate near the wall for balance or whatever. That was her spot. In fact, if the class, someone got there before her and took her space, she'd ask them to move their mat over because it was her space. And so she was like that. Talk about parigraha, non-attachment, super attached to that spot. You know, you're too attached, it's going to cause suffering. You gotta, you know, back off a little bit. She was super attached to it. One day she came, it's right before class started. It's jam-packed. It's mat to mat. You couldn't fit another mat in it. She couldn't ask someone to move. She's staring at the doorway, looking at me. And I used to teach on a stage up at the front of the room. And the class was there, and she's looking at me with these eyes like, I've made it all the way here. I really need my yoga. And so I looked at her, I said, well, you can come up on stage with me and practice if you want. Come on up. And so she said, okay. She came up on stage. She's next to me. We go through this beautiful practice together. At the end, we're sitting facing the class, and I bring my palms together. The class brings their palms together, and I say, namaste. And the class says, namaste back. And then the class rolls up their mats and they're getting ready to leave. And she looks at me, she's sitting next to me, and she goes, Stacy, what was that you said? And I said, when? And she said, at the end, you said, namaste, what is that? And I said, well, namaste, she's been practicing with me for years in the back corner. And I said, well, namaste, you know namaste. I said, Namaste means the divine light in me bows, honors, and sees the divine light in you. And when you are in that place and when I am in that place, then we are one. And she looks at me and she goes, huh, all this time I thought you were saying, have a nice day. And so really, really, I want to end this with everyone. It doesn't matter where you start on this journey, that and the practice of yoga is for everybody. No matter where you start, start where you're at, and just try it. Don't try it once. Commit to it at least 10 times consistently with the same teacher, and see if you don't feel a difference. And let it take you on this journey. So whether or not, you know, any of these words mean anything to you, it doesn't matter. It is an experiential practice. And just let it start there without anything else.
Yeah, beautiful. That's funny. Yeah, have a nice day. You're like, see, that's why you don't stay in the back corner, lady. That's why you got to come up closer.
I've got to get close sometimes.
Yeah. All right, well, namastacy.com and namaste.
Yoganamastacy.com. And Stacy is spelled S-T-A-C-Y. You know, since I started, I had the first one with it, but now with yoga's explosion over the last, you know, 25 years or so, there's different ones. So, yeah, you can find me. You can Google Stacy McCarthy in one way or the other. It will find me.
That's awesome. Well, thanks, Stacy. Thanks for taking the time. This was actually super awesome. I learned a lot here about some of these deeper aspects of yoga that I didn't know, and grateful to have you on the podcast. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Nathan. So much fun. Always so great to see you.
Yeah. All right. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Nathan Crane podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and share this on social media. Then head over to nathancrane.com for your free ebook.
So when we're talking about, you know, what are these underlying causes and conditions of these chronic diseases, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, they all have very similar, if not identical, causes. And that's the thing, is when we get to the root cause of these diseases, we can not only prevent these diseases from ever happening, but empower our bodies to heal from them.
In every one of our cells, we have tens and hundreds of thousands of chemical reactions that are happening every second that are cycling back and forth. And it's like sort of a yin and yang.
And, you know, for me, the soul's purpose is evolution. It doesn't care about comfort. It cares about evolution. Mm. And so I think so long as we are following our soul, then we will evolve. And I think what sometimes blocks us from living our purpose, from manifesting that next level of our expression, is we have not evolved.
There is also a time for letting go all the expectations and relax and just breathe and be grateful for what you have achieved.